God. It's another wiener joke! Thank you, ladies and wieners. Well, it's been another wiener week in the land of wiener for wiener jokes. And now, renowned astrophysicist Stephen W. Hawking.
We looked under that tarp 2 years ago and found that steaming pile of wieners. I'm sure a wiener would agree. I don't think making wiener jokes on the radio is kosher. Especially since it's a Jewish fellow.
And there you go. Mandatory wiener joke. Welcome to the Innerside radio program. My name is Scooter, and here is part 4 of my conversation with legendary investigative satirist Paul Krassner.
You know, you mentioned Wikipedia before. I just had an experience with Wikipedia,
okay.
Which it's just a great little story. I checked it out because I hadn't. You know, I was curious to see what they said, and in this,
what the next interviewer is going to ask you. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
The second sentence said he is Jewish. So I got in touch with him, and I argued about that. I said, you know, where did you get that? I never said I was Jewish. I said, my parents are Jewish, but, you know, you don't inherit a religion, you inherit a race, and that's what Hitler thought. I went back and forth. I mean, the guy was friendly and could see my logic. You know, I said, if I don't hear the religious tenets of it, why would I just call myself that? Because I like Chinese food? A few weeks later, I checked out of curiosity. The second sentence now says, his parents were Jewish. There it is. There's the fact. Any reporter, if they want to know if my parents were Jewish, it's right there in my Wikipedia profile.
I know you're a reformed atheist. You used to be a radical atheist, but now you're a moderate atheist, right?
Yeah, in the sense that when I at first I was a militant atheist. Because I thought it was that religion was just socially acceptable superstition.
That's kind of polite, actually.
But you know, it was just how I perceived it.
Yeah.
There was a point where I realized that because I didn't like feeling superior. It wasn't that; it was just whether I believed it or not. But when Martin Luther King, I admired what he did, and he was a Christian. But whereas George Lincoln Rockwell, who was then the head of the American Nazi Party, mm-hmm. called himself an agnostic. But I didn't agree with his purposes in life, and so it made me much much more tolerant and accepting because. Look at a country like China, which is officially atheist, and they have a terrible, awful,
right.
horrible human rights record. So I end up judging everybody as individuals and by what they do, and not by any of the labels that they're given or that they even have.
I was watching Christopher Hedges was debating.
He's good.
He is
radical in the best sense of the word.
Yeah, he was debating an atheist, Sam Harris, who I like Sam Harris a lot. He's a brilliant guy, you know. And I'm noticing
debating Sam Harris.
He was debating Sam Harris. Yeah.
You mean so
on religion?
Chris Hedges is a believer. You mean?
He's yeah yes.
Oh, well, okay, well, there's a perfect example.
That's right. That's why I brought it up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm watching this debate, and even though I'm heavily on the atheist side, Chris Hedges kind of creamed him, you know, because Sam Harris just kept getting all the facts wrong about the Middle East and so forth and the evils of Islam, and he just had to correct him so many times that he didn't have any credibility at the end of it. Although Hedges' explanation of what he believed in didn't sound different than atheist to me, but I always want to talk to him about that, but I don't have his phone number. So.
Well, in my last column for High Times, I quoted him because he was talking right after I had that paragraph about the invisible corporations and their being behind a lot of bloodshed. And it was that he talked about not only do they profit from wars, but they profit from wars that we'll lose.
Sure.
You know, it's because they still have to have the weapons.
It's a money laundering operation, really.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, actually.
You collect right. The tax dollars.
I mean, and it's such an oxymoron, because money that has been laundered is still dirty money. So, you know, they better get a better detergent.
The people that are selling the weapons are the same people who are declaring these other people as enemies. So it's transparently a money laundering operation. We're giving
you know,
some.
I was a head writer for an HBO special in 1980 on the election campaign. And it was called The Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the White House. And one of the sketches that I wrote, based on research, was about how the United States military firms were selling arms. The U.S. was selling arms to both Israel and Egypt, who were fighting each other. It was supporting both Iran and Iraq when they were fighting with each other. So, you know, it's totally amoral. You know, sometimes you need a scoring card, though. You know, which of the dictators we like and which of the dictators we don't like. And usually it's the ones who cooperate that we like and then support. That's why, you know, whether it was Saddam Hussein, who was, you know, our buddy, or who was the guy from Panama?
Noriega.
Noriega, right. Yeah. It really is a game of, like, dictator chairs.
Yeah, well, they, you know, they took Noriega out because he wasn't allowing arms to pass through to the you know, Nicaragua and
Why we support Pakistan, because they allow it.
Yeah.
You know, it is. Lenny Bruce once said, he was talking about Chicago. He said it's so corrupt, it's thrilling, but you know, Washington is so corrupt, it's ecstatic.
Well, you can always tell who our next target is. The first time you hear the word Hitler coming out of somebody's mouth, they go, oh, all right, next target. You know, they love that. It's always, that's the next Hitler.
You know? And, you know, Hitler, the real harm Hitler did, you know, forget about the Holocaust. Forget about killing Jews, gypsies, gays. One of the times I tripped, I fell flat on my face. And I was grateful that I didn't break any teeth or break my nose, but I bruised my nose, and the space between your nose and your lips, and had a bruise there, but it was a dark scab in a square form.
Man.
So it looked like a Hitler mustache, and I was going to be interviewed for documentary, and I was embarrassed, but I said, okay, what do I care? You know, but I kept looking at the camera, and once in a while I would go, hi, on me. But I thought, that's what Hitler did. He spoiled anybody else in the future to grow a square mustache.
Right, right. He stole it from Charlie Chaplin.
I thought it was the other way around.
Oh.
But in my research, I discovered that, you're right, Scooter, it was that he stole it from Charlie Chaplin. It's hard to think of. It's like somebody steals Homer Simpson's hairstyle. I don't know.
And, of course, the irony of it is that if you would go to Charlie Chaplin's Wikipedia, probably the first or second sentence is that he's Jewish.
Oh, really? Huh. I don't know why they do that. Maybe they thought because he had a Hitler mustache retroactively.
I did a whole show on Jewishness last night and woke up to good reviews this morning because it's Easter, which is the season of the Passion Plays, which has this history. So we talked about that last night on the radio, try in an enlightened and satirical fashion. It's when the Romans blamed the Jews on Easter, you know.
But, you know, even though I am, the Pope just forgave him, by the way, so it's okay. Lenny Bruce had a bit which he said, that he confessed. He said, yeah, we did it. Morty did it. We keep him in the basement.
Well, let me ask you one more question about editing his autobiography. I mean, grammatically and structurally, was it difficult? I mean, was he trying to talk in different voices the way that he did on stage? And did you have to like sort that stuff out or translate it a lot? Or was he a pretty good writer? I noticed that a lot of comics are naturally good writers anyway.
He tried to keep it conversational as he was on stage. It's interesting because, and this was the irony of the paradox, really, of the title of this book, because people think of him now, if you have an association with Lenny Bruce, you know, Dirty Language. And he would be embarrassed by how those words now are becoming all-purpose nouns, verbs, and they pretend on, like, Comedy Central to bleep them out, but, you know, with a nanosecond of a nanosecond between the first letter and the last letter of a word. So you don't even have to be a lip reader to know what they're saying. But I know a kid now, a six-year-old kid, who curses other kids, but he goes, "You're a beep, beep," because he thinks that's cursing.
Well, what's funny about censor, because I have to censor stuff for radio all the time, you know, because the bleeps can often make it like another level of comedy.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because even funnier.
Except Lenny would make it a point not to like make the word itself a
subject or noun.
Make it the in a position in a structure in a sentence so that it would get the laugh. He would do it because if he was doing a character who would use that character would do it. He was just being apt. Or if he was quoting somebody, or if he was doing like a semantic analysis of the language, you know, that's the risk of freedom. But it makes me feel like an English teacher. You know, well, don't you have a bigger vocabulary? And kids coming up to be comics now, they do it because they think it's expected of them, or maybe it's because the edge of it has been taken off. It's not so shocking anymore. It's like a cliche. Sometimes it works for the rhythm of a sentence.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, a little variety at least.
Yeah, it really depends upon the rhythm of the speaker and how they're using it as to whether it works or not for me, you know.
Yeah.
And some people are just natural, great cursors.
That's exactly it. That it should have some creativity to it. You know, the first time I met Lenny, he was still using euphemisms like frig.
I see. I thought that was a modern thing. I didn't know that went that far back.
The thing is, I had done an interview with Dr. Albert Ellis, who was a he started a form of therapy called rational therapy and then expanded it to rational emotive therapy. But he was also a sexologist, wrote many papers and books, very progressive attitude towards sex, ahead of his time in that respect. And at one point he criticized somebody and said, that's none of his bleeping business. And he talked about his campaign. You know, the worst word, of course, was the F word, or become the F bomb. So it's not just a word now; it's a bomb. Although I have seen people now referring to the F word, meaning foreclosure.
That's right. The new F bomb. That's right. That's Harry.
That's Shearer, right. Oh, there's another F word, F bomb.
Yeah.
And so he would say, don't say F you to somebody. Say unbleep you to them, because if bleeping was a good thing, then you'd have to say unbleeping if you want to insult them or something. And so I at that time, the magazines wouldn't spell them out. They'd have dashes or asterisks. And my line was, well, you know, there's a whole generation now being born that's going to become horny from seeing asterisks. And so I gave Lenny an advanced copy of that in his hotel room. And he says, how do you get away with that? And I said, well, the Supreme Court just said that to be considered obscene, something has to arouse your prurient interest. And he went on his bed in his hotel room. He opened up the suitcase and took out a gigantic unabridged dictionary. We looked up prurient. And at first he said, to itch. He said, "What do you mean?" And they discussed it, and he discussed it at his show that night at Town Hall with a copy of The Realist, with that, and read from it. And he got banned from Town Hall as a result, but he said, "I'm not worried." He said, "They'll hire me again because they made too much money mm-hmm. tonight," which they did, and they did hire him again. You know, and so he then started using the language that they found a reason to bust him, because they couldn't bust him for making fun of a congressman or somebody. He and George Carlin were both kind of semanticists, both like to analyze the meaning of words and how they can affect behavior. And their point of view was very much the same. The difference was that Lenny, everything came developed on stage and sometimes would evolve out of a conversation he had in the afternoon. And something that would be a throwaway line would develop each performance until it was like a 10-minute bit.
Got it, yeah.
Whereas George
that's
Carlin...
That's the art of stand-up, more or less, right?
Well, yeah, but not necessarily, because Carlin would write down everything.
Right.
And then he would memorize it.
Yeah.
And there were just two styles of creativity, but different ways. And Lenny would repeat stuff. You know, he would try, if you got, 5 or 10 minutes new stuff in each performance, that was a good thing. Whereas Carlin would do from show to show to show until it got really honed down
yeah.
to a little piece of verbal art.
Surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was another installment of my conversation with Paul Krassner, the greatest living American bard of resistance since before it was fashionable. Check him out at paulkrassner.com and consider picking up his newly revised autobiography, Confessions of a Raving Unconfined Nut. And now, some Lenny Bruce, recorded in 1958, Religions, Inc., from the album The Sick Humor of Lenny Bruce.
I take you now to the headquarters of Religions Incorporated. And seated around the desk on Madison Avenue sit the religious leaders of our country. Religion, big business. We hear H.A. addressing the tight little group on Madison Avenue.
Ladies and gentlemen, nice to see so many boys here tonight. I see religious leaders I haven't seen in many years. I just was talking to Billy this afternoon. I said, "Billy, we've come a long way, sweetie. A long way. Who'd have thought back in 31 we were hustling baby pictures in? And shingles and siding were swinging. Yeah, we didn't know what the hell to do. We were going to... Maybe the CC camps are starting to move." And I didn't know myself, And just like that, we came on. The Gideon, bop, and there we were. The graph here tells a story. That's about it. For the first time in 12 years, Catholicism is up 9 points. Judaism is up 15. The big P, the Pentecostal, is starting to move finally. And now, gentlemen, we've got Mr. Necktie from our religious novelty house in Chicago, who's got a beautiful cellar. The genuine Jewish star, Lucky Cross, and cigarette lighter combined. Then we got the Kiss Me in the Dark, Mazizu. And the Walk Me, Talk Me, Wet Me Camel. And these wonderful little cocktail napkins with some hell of a things there. Another martini for Mother Gabrini. And some pretty far out things, may I say. Now, We like to, as you know, there's a lot of religious leaders that we've seen here, boys we don't know. This is the first time we've really united like this. There's about 6,000 boys out here from all over the country. And little favors, you know, the commissioner promised there'd be no individual hustling, you know. I mean, let's make the scene together, because, like, if we burn ourselves, where are we going to end up, you dig? Okay. Now, I want to introduce... Oh, we got Mr. Acton here, a great man, our Seventh-day Adventist, who on a leading tour of the leper colonies took some beautiful color slides. Here is the greatest holy roller in America today. A great man and a great holy roller, Arl.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, boy. Here, have a snake. Gentlemen. Tonight is thrill night. Does thrill night seem to jaw you? Gentlemen, why is it thrill night? Is it thrill night for the teenagers? The Elvis Presleys? No, gentlemen, it's thrill night for me, because tonight, for the first time in 7 years, I'm talking to men of the industry. For the first time in 7 years, gentlemen, I'm not going to look into one honest, sweaty, Lockheed face. Not one thick redneck! Gentlemen, tonight I stood for the last time in Oakland. I looked for the last time at 1,900 square feet of canvas. I felt the heat of the gas burn on my neck. I looked down at the sawdust. I looked at these people. And I said, Arnold, tonight... you're going to be talking to the men. And I said, what would I talk about? And it came to me like that, gentleman, the heavenly land and where it is. Well, gentlemen, tonight, where is the heavenly land? Well, I'll tell you one thing, my friends, the heavenly land is not in the cheap neighborhood bar. The heavenly land is not in the burlesque house. The heavenly land is not in Dreamland. The heavenly land is not on Wall Street. Well, you might say to me, all right, you said it's not on Wall Street. You tell us it's not in the cheap neighborhood bar. Gentlemen, did you wonder if tonight I knew where the heavenly land is? I do, my friends. The heavenly land is in one place and one place only. And do you know where that is? Chevy's Ravine! And them sons of bitches are trying to take it away from us! With that million-dollar land grab and the city planning farmers! Gentlemen, I know what some of you are thinking out there. I know what's going on, gentlemen. Some of you gentlemen who have never seen me before, you're saying, look at that man up there, this modern-day prophet there. Look at him ranting and raving. Look at him, he's so smart. He told us where the heavenly land is. Now does he know what to do with it when he gets it? Well, maybe, gentlemen, that's not. Maybe I'm dumb. That's it. There's old dumbbell up there. Ha, ha, ha! There's the dummy. Would you all have a laugh? That's right, laugh at him. Ho, 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 ho! There's the dummy. I'm dumb. Ha, 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 ha. Yes, I'm dumb. I got 2 Lincoln Continentals. That's a goddamn dumb I am. I'm dumb in hell. I don't know how much a whole lot of nines are. Now, maybe that's it, gentlemen. Maybe I don't know everything in the world. Maybe I'm stupid. But if I don't, I got some men on my staff who do. Tell us now what to do with the heavenly land when we get it, Rabbi Wise.
Well, thank you very much. I think we should subdivide.
That's pretty kooky, Rob. That's pretty far up. Now, gentlemen, what's that? What is it?
Your long-distance call just came in, sir.
I'll take it in there. I'll talk to you boys later. Yes, operator. This is 610. Yes, I'll take the charges. Yes. Hello, Johnny. What's shaking, baby? Boy, it's really been an election month, hasn't it, sweetie? Well, listen, I hate to...
Yeah, the puff of white smoke knocked me out. We got an 8-page layout with Viceroy. The new Pope is a thinking man. Yeah. Well, if you wanted to go for the tattoo, but I figured the hell with it. It would have been too far out. I thought so. Yeah.
Listen, ain't to bug you, but they're bugging us again with that dumb integration. Now, I don't know why the hell I'm gonna go to school either. Yeah, that school bus scene. Well, we had to give them the bus, but there's two toilets on each bus. But they're bugging us. They say, get the religious leaders. Make them talk about it. I know it, but they're getting hip. Yes. They say, no, they don't want no more quotations from the Bible. They want us to come out and say things. They want us to say, let them go to school with them. No, I did walking across the water and snake into the cane. They don't want to hear that jazz anymore. And that stop war jazz every time the bombs scare. Yeah, they keep saying, thou shalt not kill means that, not a man's section A. Yes. They don't want the bomb. Sure, they're commies. No, I ain't getting snotty, but we gotta do something. Yeah. I got two... Yeah, we got some people on our side. We got Scatman Crothers and Stephen Fisher. Don't do no good. No, but what they... Yes, that's why I called you. What are we gonna do? Sure, that's easy for you to say. You're over there. Yeah. I know. And thanks for the pepperoni. Yeah. Yeah. Billy, you want to say something to him? Billy wants to know if you're going to deal with them Dago sports cars. A Ferrer Moo or some dumb thing. Yeah. When you come to the coast? The valley is hot, but we'll fix it. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I get you the Sullivan Show the 19th. Yeah, send me some 8x10 glasses. Yeah. Just, it's a good television show. It's way, that's all. Wear the big ring. Yeah. The ratings, we can fix that. Ha, put that thumb ago. I'm sorry, okay. All right, I'm cool.
Yeah, Philly Joe says hello.
Yeah. Oh, did you dig Spellman on Stars of Jazz? Okay, sweetie. Yeah. No, nobody knows you're Jewish.
Special thanks to Paul Krassner at paulkrassner.com. KRASSNER. Neil Wingenbach for the Lenny Bruce material. My mother for the twisted sense of humor. This has been the Inner Side Radio program, which is meticulously archived. Simply Google The Inner Side. My name is Scooter, and I'll see y'all next week.
Down with disease, 3 weeks in my bed, trying to stop these demons that keep.